What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Former Chinese leader Jiang Zemin dies at 96. Plus, the U.S. Senate passes legislation to protect same-sex marriage. And we'll assess transatlantic ties as France's president heads to Washington.
Mr. Macron's visit signals a recovery in relations between Paris and Washington after a low point last year.
It's Wednesday, November 30th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A new Alzheimer's drug developed by Eisai and Biogen has demonstrated a moderate effect in slowing cognitive decline, according to research reported Tuesday. The drug slowed cognitive decline by 27% compared with a placebo over 18 months among study volunteers with early-stage Alzheimer's, though it was associated with swelling and bleeding in the brain. The companies have asked the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to conditionally approve the drug based on an earlier study, and a decision is expected by January 6th. Former Chinese leader Jiang Zemin has died at the age of 96 of leukemia and multiple organ failure, according to state media. Zhang, who came to power after the crackdown on the Tiananmen Square democracy protests, presided over the market-oriented changes that turned China into a global economic juggernaut. And staying with China, economic activity in the country contracted further in November, according to China's National Bureau of Statistics, with China's Purchasing Managers Index falling further into contraction territory, worse than expectations by economists polled by the Wall Street Journal. Gauges of activity in manufacturing, services, and construction also deteriorated more than expected, leading economists to forecast 2022 growth to be the weakest in decades, excluding the pandemic hit of 2020. Journal Markets reporter Chelsea Delaney has more.
The economy is basically getting hit from all sides, first and foremost from China's repeated lockdowns, but also from the real estate crash and from a slowdown in demand for its exports from abroad. Now, one big question is how the protests we've seen unfolding in recent days will impact growth. On the one hand, economists say it could weigh further on consumer sentiment, but on the other, it could boost growth if it encourages Beijing to relax its very strict COVID rules. In any case, the slowdown in China's economy is likely to weigh on the rest of the world.
The Eurozone's annual rate of inflation fell in November for the first time since mid-2021 as energy prices fell, a development that economists warned wouldn't keep the European Central Bank from increasing interest rates further. Data from the European Union's Statistics Agency shows consumer prices in November were 10% higher than a year earlier, down from the 10.6% annual rate of inflation recorded in October. The U.S. Senate has passed legislation recognizing Americans' access to same-sex marriage. A dozen Republicans joined Democrats in backing the measure, which intends to solidify the ability of same-sex and interracial couples to get married and requires states to recognize the marriages. Same-sex couples have a constitutional right to marry following a 2015 Supreme Court ruling. However, in June, Justice Clarence Thomas said that the court should review that 2015 decision in future rulings, leading Democrats to bring same-sex marriage legislation to a vote. The U.S. House is expected to vote on the measure next week. We are exclusively reporting that Airbnb is launching a new listing service for rental apartments in a bid to attract some of the biggest landlords and property managers in the U.S. to the service and opening up a largely untapped market. The new service will feature more than 175 buildings managed by Equity Residential, Greystar Real Estate Partners, and 10 other companies, Airbnb said. And on deck for today, U.S. House Democrats are expected to elect New York lawmaker Hakeem Jeffries to lead the party in the next Congress. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is set to give remarks on the U.S. economy and labor market today. The Fed's Beige Book of Economic Anecdotes collected from businesses is also due, along with October job opening data from the Labor Department and earnings from Costco and Salesforce. Where, oh, where are the self-driving cars? That's a question investors are asking themselves after years of ambitious targets and bold promises about the pace of driverless car development, but much less than expected to show for it. Wall Street Journal reporter Tim Higgins has been tracking the increasing investor skepticism about the autonomous car industry and what it means for companies hoping to get their cars on the road. And he joins us now from San Francisco with the latest. Hey, Tim, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So tell us what you're hearing from investors. They had been throwing money at driverless car development for years, had they not?
Well, I can here in San Francisco walk outside of my door and oftentimes see a self-driving car go down the street. So the technology is on the precipice of occurring, but the frustration among some investors is the pace. And the idea a few years ago was that this was going to be a solved problem and that these vehicles would become ubiquitous and perhaps dislodge the traditional automakers' hold on personal transportation. But in reality, it's turned out a lot slower and a lot harder than a lot of people thought. And that's in part because of safety concerns, because of the technology itself, because the world is just not ready for replacing cars.
What form is this investor skepticism taking?
Well, probably the most dramatic came in recent weeks when Ford and Volkswagen pulled the plug on their huge bet for self-driving. They had put in billions of dollars into a startup called Argo AI. But in the end, the commentary really coming out of Dearborn, where Ford is based, was that it was going to be a long road ahead before there could be profitability in a fully self-driving vehicle. And that is where the frustration is coming among other investors, is just that it's just going to be such a long road to this being an actual business case.
And so, Tim, what does this investor pullback mean for companies, big and small, who are trying to push forward the future of autonomous vehicles?
Well, there could be huge potential, huge upside for those who have the money and the patience to go the distance. Perhaps the likes of Waymo, Google's parent Alphabet self-driving company. GM has invested big in a company called Cruise. It really comes down to deep pockets and a willingness to go the distance. For smaller companies, it's a tougher road. And we've seen in the past that these kinds of cold periods create a shakeup. There are winners and losers. And if this technology is real, then we could potentially see some winners come out of it.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Tim Higgins joining us from San Francisco. Tim, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll take a look at the status of transatlantic relations as French President Emmanuel Macron begins a state visit to the United States. That's after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
President Biden is hosting the first state visit of his presidency beginning today as French President Emmanuel Macron kicks off a four-day visit to the United States. U.S. officials say that Biden has a close relationship with Macron despite disagreements between the two countries. However, the two leaders are meeting at a time when transatlantic ties are beginning to fray, as European officials express frustration at their increasing reliance on Washington for both security and economic stability. Wall Street Journal reporter Noémie Besserbe covers French politics and foreign policy for us, and she joins us now from Washington with a look at the state of U.S.-EU relations and how that all ties into Macron's visit. Noémie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So give us a sense of the state of transatlantic ties now, if you could, especially from the French perspective. And perhaps we could start with what's going right.
So Mr. Macron's visit signals a recovery in relations between Paris and Washington after a low point last year when the U.S. pushed France out of a multi-billion dollar deal to supply submarines to Australia. And it comes at a time when the war in Ukraine has brought France and the U.S. closer. It has reinvigorated NATO and ignited a boom in trade and investment between the U.S. and Europe.
And yet you describe a transatlantic relationship that is starting to fray. Why is that?
Well, the new U.S. legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is set to come into effect in January, is seen by the French and many Europeans as a real stab in the back because the European industry is already struggling with high energy prices because of the war in Ukraine. And this new U.S. legislation is said to make things worse. The French worry that many companies are going to leave Europe to take advantage of these new subsidies. And this would be obviously a catastrophe for the continent.
What is Macron's plan to deal with the effects of the Inflation Reduction Act? Is that going to come up on this visit?
Well, Mr. Macron is going to try to seek exemptions to some of these rules. This package includes what we call local content provisions, which means that in order to benefit from some tax credits, you need to have some of your production here in the US. And so he's going to try to seek some exemptions to that for Europe. And then he is going to discuss his plans to respond with a European act, which would in the same way allow companies to benefit from subsidies, but also potentially to create subsidies which would only work for European-made products.
Yeah, it sounds like Macron is sort of asking the European Union to go toe-to-toe with the U.S. on trade policy here. How are EU leaders responding to that suggestion?
Well, I think that all the European leaders agree that they need to do something about this because it's going to impact them in a big way. But they can't really agree on what they should do to respond to this. And I think that in particular, France and Germany do not see eye to eye on this. France is very keen to keep subsidies for European companies. And Germany is very reluctant to that idea for the moment.
And switching from trade to the war in Ukraine, Noémie, how in particular has that war affected the transatlantic relationship?
I think that Europeans and the French in particular feel that they're paying a very high price for the sanctions taken by the West against Russia, especially with the rising energy prices. And that this is something that the US should engage on with France and that they should share that burden more evenly, especially because these high energy prices in Europe position the U.S., puts them in a very good spot, and they could take advantage of that position to lure investments outside of Europe and get companies to relocate production to the U.S.
Just to be clear, though, between Presidents Biden and Macron, do they actually disagree about how the war is being fought, how it should be ended? I'm just trying to gauge how deep that disagreement really goes.
I think that actually today there is an agreement on both sides that the war needs to end around a negotiating table and not on the battlefield, that today they are aligned on that. What remains key is that it should be up to Ukraine to decide when and how that happens. And I think that both France and the U.S. agree on that.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Noémie Bisserbe, who covers French politics and foreign policy for us. Noémie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And finally, as the workplace's future bosses continue their education, a number are now being taught how to deliver bad news, whether that's firing someone or calling out an underperforming colleague. A new course at Berkeley's Haas School of Business called Difficult Conversations Conflict Lab aims to prepare students for workplace tensions, which, based on some of the role plays in the class, do sound pretty uncomfortable.
You know that in that last meeting, Mark blew it in there. And I heard you say, don't worry about it.
She was promoted over me because she took credit for my work.
WSJ careers reporter Lindsay Ellis explains the value that educators see in future managers practicing how to navigate office politics before having to do the real thing.
The instructors of the class told me that it was an issue that had bubbled up in their lives after getting MBAs. They had observed in clients, in former classmates, in colleagues, that this was an issue that people were struggling with. And if we take a step back, so many conflicts in the office these days are making the headlines. From Elon Musk's assertion that his staff needs to be more hardcore to mass layoffs via Zoom. This is something that in workplaces, managers and leaders, their difficult conversations are coming into public view.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.